Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com, Cygnos.com, with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hello, book besties. We are so excited to be here discussing Fallen and the Kiss of Dusk by Carissa Broadbent, book 4 in her Crowns of Nyaxia series.
We are so excited.
So excited.
Wow. We are back, baby.
Yeah.
We're back.
We're back.
So excited to be back.
So good to be back.
You know what else is back, Kim?
What's back?
Chapter chats. Chapter chats.
Tell us about it.
Oh, happening on Patreon. My friends, to everyone's joy on Patreon, the chapter chats are back. Our very coveted and, oh my gosh, much anticipated chapter chats, where we take a break every few chapters, get on and discuss our thoughts real time as we're reading. Kim and I had so much fun recording some pretty lengthy chapter chats as we read this book.
Yeah.
So if you enjoy this book and enjoy hearing our thoughts on it as we go real time with theories, please head over to Patreon for that. Also on Patreon, as always, our tier one book besties get early access, ad-free episodes, plus our romance reviews, and our tier two book bitches, whoop whoop, y'all, oh my gosh. We've been having so much fun this summer with you guys, with everyone on Patreon, and our three new series for tier two have just been such a treat.
Yeah.
Trending Pages, where we break down the hottest romantasy books everyone is talking about. So far, we have covered Silver Elite and Shield of Sparrows. That has been such a delight over there.
Yeah.
Also, Cauldron Chats, which are exclusive for tier two, where I break down an ACOTAR topic that you vote on.
Yeah,
that's so been fun. Really fun. We've done Bat Boys backstories, Jurian, Miriam, and Draken. Bargains are coming this month. Very exciting.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, our tier two exclusive access to our beloved SJM series, where we deep dive characters, couples, and scenes from all of Sarah J. Maas's series. So if you want more from us, please come on over and join our Patreon family over at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. We would absolutely love to have you.
Love it.
Okay. And Kim, who else do we want to shout out today? Speaking of Patreon.
Yes. Speaking of Patreon, let's do some Patreon shout outs. So another benefit to being a tier two, one of our book betches, is that you get a special shout out in one of our episodes. So this episode, we are going to be shouting out Elise K, Dana G, and Bianca. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. Genuinely, if it were not for you guys, we could not continue to do this. And we are so thankful.
We are so thankful and so grateful. And we're sending you the biggest hug. And we love you.
Love you.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay, guys. Let's do this. This is your spoiler warning for all of the Crowns of Nyaxia series thus far. That is Serpent and the Wings of Night, Ashes and the Star-Cursed King. Not really Slaying the Vampire Conqueror because we haven't read it.
No.
So I'm not going to include that. I am going to include the novella Six Scorched Roses and Songbird and the Heart of Stone, as well as Fallen and the Kiss of Dusk. Let's
go,
baby. Okay.
Let's go.
So where we left off in Songbird and the Heart of Stone, everyone, a quick refresher before we dive in to Fallen. So Asar's mission per Nyaxia was to resurrect Alaris. Didn't go to her liking there. Her husband, Alaris, who is her husband and the god of death. But plot twist, Asar turned out himself was the sole relic needed for the necromancy ceremony because he is a descendant of Alaris.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes down to it, Asar is ready to sacrifice himself as he does, but Misha doesn't complete the ceremony fully. And in the process, she absorbs a piece of Alaris's power. Misha then kills Atroxus, woohoo, with the golden arrow. Bye-bye, son. And the white pantheon gods and goddesses kill Misha, take Asar away. And Asar, who is now carrying Alaris's power and maybe his memories, we don't know. It's a little murky there at the end.
Unclear.
But Misha She does die. But while dying, she hears Asar pleading, I need her. It's very beautiful. It's very full circle. But she wakes up in the underworld with Vincent saying, we have work to do.
Oh my gosh, that ending.
What an ending to Songbird. Yes. Okay. Take us to
yes.
Fallen.
Okay. So now as we open Fallen, thanks to Atroxus's death, the sun is gone. Both the mortal world and the underworld are on a countdown to collapse. And as a wraith, if the underworld falls, Misha is gone for good. Enter Akasia, who drops our big quest bomb, everybody. So the only way to save both Misha and the underworld is for Asar to ascend to godhood as the god of death. Now, in order to do that, he and Misha will have to collect the three cores of Alaris's power, the mask, the eye, and the heart. And Akasia is very clear, only once you have all three together should Asar wield them. Let's pin that.
let's pin that because they didn't, but let's do it ourselves.
Yeah, they didn't pin it. Let's all take heed of that. Asar and Misha certainly did not.
The goddess of fate is telling you not to do something. You should probably take heed. You should listen up.
Yeah.
Let's turn our listening ears on, friends.
Let's put them on. Mm-hmm. And he says, got it. Totally gonna nail it. Not gonna do it, but I'm glad that you told me.
He says when Misha is about to die, there are no rules.
The rules go out the window.
And it happens all the time, so.
It happens the entire book. But Akasia also says, oh, by the way, this process is gonna be brutal, life-threatening, and generally awful. But have fun!
XOXO!
Yeah, she's kind of like the surreal, you know what I mean? Like she kind of drops some bombs and is like, gotta go, bye.
Have fun. Yeah.
So that's not foreboding whatsoever.
Oh, no, what a great way to start off.
Yeah, I think our quest is like, you might die. It's going to be awful, but here we go.
You know, I did appreciate that we figured it out at the beginning. It wasn't like we took too long until we figured out the main through line here, like, you know, besides some other stuff. But I loved that we were like, here's the quest. I'm going to spell it out to you.
Yeah, I'm going to really just spell it out. And then here we go when we're on our way.
And that is similar to Songbird, too, I think. In Songbird, they had a specific quest to go down, you know, the different sanctums.
Yeah.
Which I do enjoy the straightforwardness of that.
I do, too. But let's start off with talking about Asar and Misha's romance, because this was everything.
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 This really made the book for me.
Agreed.
I absolutely loved the romance.
Me too. I think Carissa said before this book came out that this was her most romantic book she's ever written. And I would absolutely agree with that.
Same.
It was very different tonally to Rain and Aurea's relationship. In a good way. I mean, I love, you guys know I love me some Rain, but this was so deeply vulnerable and raw and romantic in just a completely different way. And it's also interesting because obviously when Fallen opens, we are at the midpoint of Asar and Misha's love story, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why everything works so well here because we had already laid all of the groundwork in Songbird. You know, there's that deep trust between the two of them that was forged through danger and the vulnerability that they have with each other, which was earned through their honesty. And I think that foundation makes Asar's single-minded drive to get Misha back hit that much harder.
100%. It made it make sense too.
Yeah.
It was justified. It was very grounding. It made sense. Yeah.
Totally. And I think Fallen really gets to lean into their devotion to each other as that emotional through line, even as the stakes get higher and higher and the danger gets a lot more intense.
Yes, exactly. And that emotional through line really is what carries us through the romance. You know, we love the romance.
The romance. We love it.
And she delivered on that. Okay. So speaking of the romance, let's jump in. They are reunited.
Yeah.
We are back. We have found each other. Asar's just looking at her and he thinks, welcome home. The breeze whispered again. And I was certain that it wasn't talking about Morthryn. It was talking about her. Oh, guys. And then she just whispers, hello, Warden. And he says, hello, Dawn Drinker.
Oh,
you guys.
Why do I love this so much?
Why did those little nicknames hit so hard? They're not even that cute. Warden and Dawn Drinker, like they're not even cute names.
No, but like it's just in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, Warden and Dawn Drinker, it's so cute.
And like the whispering, the hello, Warden. And he's like, oh, my Dawn Drinker. Okay, so then Asar also goes on to say, Misha Ilie, Dawn Drinker or Shadowborn, living or dead, I will never let you go. Guys, the devotion.
Guys.
And he won't. And he won't.
No.
He will not let her go. This really becomes this recurring theme between them throughout the book. This, I will never let you go.
Yeah.
You're the sacrifice I will not make. It's very, you know, above all else, it's you, it's us. And everything else is these grand stakes. But at the end of the day, all the two of them care about are each other. And we're really laying this from the beginning, him saying, I will never let you go. And it's hard, you know, because she is a wraith and she's dwindling. So it's, you know.
Yeah. It's a tricky situation, but he's like, we're gonna figure it out because I'll never let you go.
I will never. Speaking of never letting go, we do have to discuss a little pickle that they're in because, you know, he does have to let her go, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because he does go to embrace her
and
hug her and have that reunion moment that we have all wanted.
Yeah.
And Carissa said, ha ha, you can't have nice things.
No.
So actually, don't get too excited, listeners, because they can't touch each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They can touch through pieces of clothing, but they can't, their skin can't touch each other.
Yes. No skin to skin contact. Sheets, fine.
Yeah.
You know, gloves, have at it, but not skin.
Right.
So unfortunate.
Yeah.
So, and that is because the living can't touch a wraith without it burning their skin clear off.
Yeah.
And that is unfortunate. And it's extra unfortunate because at this exact moment, we're realizing that Asar pulled her through the veil too fast.
Yeah.
So she's starting to wither. Like literally, it's like Sister Sheds a Lot. If you listened to our, to our Six Scorched Roses episode, she's just dwindling right in front of her eyes. She's, she's not doing well.
Uh-huh.
And he's just still in agony from touching her. But you know, again, he refuses to let her go. This recurring theme.
Yeah.
So he offers her his blood, which luckily now is God blood, which is just extra powerful. It's the good stuff, you know?
That works out so well.
And leave it to Carissa to make us love this blood drinking scene. Every single time. I think she really made us into the vampire girlies to really appreciate the blood drinking scene the first cave scene.
Yes.
In our first serpent book. But oh my gosh, she's saying no because she doesn't want to hurt him. And he's just saying like, shh, let me help you drink. And it's so good and also sexy. And it's all those things combined. But yeah, so the god blood does help her, which is fantastic.
It is.
It weakens him a little bit. But you know, we're back and forth. It's a pendulum.
It's a roller coaster, you guys.
It is. It is.
This entire book is a little bit of a roller coaster, but we love to see that. So let's jump ahead just a little bit to one of our other favorite moments from the beginning of the book.
Mm.
So long story short, they're ambushed, okay? And Misha wakes up in the ballroom of the Shadowborn Castle. And Ygritte, our bitchy bird sis, okay? She's back.
She's back.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Our majestic bird sis, Ygritte, she has the floor, okay? They're at the Shadowborn Castle. She wakes up. They're, like, on the dais, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Also, Septimus is there.
Septimus.
With his damn cigarillo.
Oh,
and his white suit.
God, the white suit kills me, guys. I know it's his colors. I know that the Bloodborne have to wear white and red, which unfortunate that they have to wear white considering blood stains white. But, you know, fine.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but the smoking, and I get it. I think it's to keep him healthy or not dying with his Bloodborne illness. But something about the white suit and the smoking together isn't really working for me. But, you know, we've seen some fan art.
Yeah, we have. He's hot.
We've seen some fan art that is working.
Yeah.
And, you know, turns out, if you've read Magnolia Parks, we're really thinking of BJ but blonde situation for Septimus. So go with us there.
Go with us there. We're liking what we're seeing. I just, the fashion choices and the smoking choices would not be our personal favorite, but I trust Carissa.
I do.
To get us there with him.
Implicitly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
But it's fun to see him here, 100%.
It is fun to see him here. We are definitely clocking him. Everything he's doing, we're making note of. Okay, so Asar is still out cold, and he's still weakened from earlier from letting Misha drink from him. Ygritte and her men are about to kill him, and we really need angry god Asar here. Stat. It's DEFCON 5, okay?
It is.
So Misha's like, what can I do? What can I do?
Hmm.
She decides to use the same tactic that once pushed Rain to his potential, and that is, of course, putting herself in danger, okay?
Of course it is.
Yeah, she's like, what can I do? I will sacrifice myself and put myself in extreme danger, and that will work.
And you know it does. It sure does every time.
And it does. And she knows that Asar will snap into wielding that god power that he holds. And just like with Rain, It works. Just as Ygritte is about to bring down her blade on Misha, quote, the room plunged into an eerie static silence. The candle snuffed out. The room fell to slow, ominous darkness, shadows painting across my vision like bandages winding around and around and around us all. And a voice, quiet and booming at once, said, get your hands off my wife. Excuse me?
This absolutely killed me. I was not anticipating it, and I was so here for it, and I could not have loved this more.
Agreed.
This felt like Carissa was giving us fan service. We're like, oh, he's gonna be protective. And then he comes out with, get your hands off my wife.
Uh-huh.
Shut up. Uh-huh. Shut up.
Shut up, Carissa. You knew what you were doing with that. And honestly, kudos, because we went feral over it.
We did.
I mean, who doesn't love that, get your hands off my wife? Who doesn't love that?
God, it's good.
It's good.
And also the wife throw in there was really fun.
Yeah.
And I love that he was like, it was just like biological. Like, I don't even know what, I couldn't even help it.
I just had to say it. And it's like, of course you did.
Because she's your queen.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard because I still think there's something about their connection we're not understanding, which is hard because we're at the end of their duology.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like there was a connection at the beginning of Songbird that we still didn't really figure out. Like, I guess it was the anchor that whole time, but I still felt like there was some other bond. There was some other thing
between them
that was clicking and tying. And before, you know, she would touch him and it would be like a buzzing and there were like some things. And then there's a point in this book where in his head, it's whispering, it's her, it is her. And it's like, it kept saying those three words. And maybe that is because she's the queen, like of the
right
of death and of the underworld.
Right.
Maybe that's what it was. Like, she was just destined to be this.
Sure. I totally see that too. Yeah.
Yes. So I loved the, get your hands off my wife. And I do think when he says that it's just biological, it is that there is something there between them, this bond that I do feel like is deeper than the anchor.
Agreed.
But I think that's what he's innately playing on when he says it's biological.
Absolutely.
Okay, now, so before we go on our scavenger hunt, everybody,
yeah,
we do want to chat about our sweet Asar and what we learn in this book, specifically through the prologues and the interludes and our trip to Rivenhall.
Mm.
So let's start out with the prologues and the interludes. We have said it once and we will say it time and time again. Carissa is the queen of prologues.
Yeah.
It is always gorgeous. It is always this fairy tale, omniscient voice that makes it feel intimate and epic at the same time.
Yeah.
It's chef's kiss, truly, every single time. So here is the first line of the prologue. Quote, this is the tale of how a fallen one ascends. Long ago, I told you a tale of a chosen girl who fell to the darkness. Now I will tell you the tale of a boy who was born within it.
Shut up.
I can't handle this. It's so good.
How does your brain come up with that? Like, in
it's
how,
gorgeous.
How?
And I love that it's just the prologue and the interludes.
Mm.
I do think this writing style might be a little much for me if it was the whole book. I think I might get a little lost in it.
Yeah.
And so I love that it feels like just a little treat, like a little taste of it.
Yeah.
And it also gives us backstory and it also gives depth to the whole lushness of the book. I just loved it. Oh, and the boy who was born within it. Oh.
I think her doing that, changing the writing style, differentiates it so that the flashbacks do feel different and it's not just the same writing, but in a different, like you go back in time. I feel like the way that she did that really differentiated it in a really fun way and elevated it and made it feel so different and special.
Yes.
And then you go back into the regular story and you're like, okay, now we're back to this writing, but getting those little tastes, like you said,
yes,
just felt so special and magical and truly like a little fairy tale.
Yeah. And it almost fun to solve the kind of mystery of thinking like, oh, okay, so this is Asar. Okay, so he's on the island. Oh, that must be Gideon.
Mm.
Oh, he's taking him to Rivenhall. Like, we're kind of figuring it out in the fairy tale aspect.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of a certain way that Sarah A. Parker wrote in When the Moon Hatched. And I also think all this prose kind of reminds me of One Dark Window, Two Twisted Crowns, like fairy tale prose. And it's just, I love it. Love, love, love it.
Love it.
Okay. So we also get a lot of backstory in our interludes, the same kind of fairy tale omniscient tone here. And like you said, the perfect way to flesh out his character and how brutal his childhood was. Because just getting a flashback of that, I think wouldn't have the weight. And Asar, while he is so vulnerable with Misha here, and I do think he would eventually in real life, because these are real people.
Sure.
Tell her these memories. We, as the reader, getting them real time, we don't have time for him to tell her these things right now. We've got other priorities, but we need to see them. So this was the way to do it.
Totally.
And we see him at 8 years old. So he was raised on this desolate island, quote, off the marshy coasts of the vampire kingdom he could one day come to rule. Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
We're setting up he's a prince. It's so interesting. He's a prince, but he has to like survive on the blood of these like fish and squirrels. And his mother is just like slurring at him, saying like, you could be king from my blood, not his. Like, it's just so sad.
It's very weird.
It's really paints a picture.
Yeah.
And then Gideon arrives. So he is sent by the king to retrieve Asar.
Yep.
And he takes him to Rivenhall to study magic and really to prove his usefulness. And it is very much ingrained in him. If you are not useful, if you do not come up with a key, then you will be tossed away. You will not be here anymore.
Yep.
We won't have use for you. So Gideon then proceeds to spend all of Asar's childhood systematically abusing him and conditioning him and weaponizing the deaths of Lucy and Ophelia to mold him into the weapon that he and the king want, and really just reinforcing this idea that Asar's only good for destruction.
Yeah.
And it isn't until he is sentenced to Morthryn that he realizes that his gifts can be more than just this blade used for killing. Like, he can mend and heal Morthryn and the underworld and like help these souls pass on. And it's so sad that despite that, Gideon's brainwashing still convinces him that he's inherently bad and unworthy of goodness or love or happiness. And that's something that we see him carry both books, this entire duology.
Absolutely.
And we see Misha, you know, kind of start to break down those walls, but seeing the backstory makes it make sense. It really makes that vulnerability in him make sense.
Yeah, it's so sad. And Carissa has a way of writing things that are almost hard to read. They're so real and so vulnerable and raw. And you just kind of feel like, oh my gosh, your heart just breaks for this little boy who was conditioned from 8 years old. I mean, that's probably all the memories. He barely probably has any memories at this point of his time with his mother. His whole childhood was essentially being abused, like you said. And it just breaks your heart because it's like, of course he would feel that way. Of course he was told from day one, like, all you're good for is destruction and death. And so this little child is like, okay, you're right. Like, I don't deserve anything nice. And it's like, oh, you do, Asar.
But you do, you sweet, sweet boy.
You sweet man. Okay. Well, speaking of Rivenhall, we're going to take a very quick little trip back to Songbird. If you remember when they reached Secrets, the level in the Sanctum, and we learned that the landscape looks different to everyone that is there. Now, Misha sees the Citadel and Asar mentions a castle. But when she asks if he means the Shadowborn Castle, he gets really weird. And this is what he says. He blinked, momentarily confused. The Shadowborn Castle. And we immediately were like, okay, well, he's not saying the Shadowborn Castle.
Okay, he's lying. So he's lying. That's a lie. I think even Misha in her head was like, wow, he was a terrible liar. Okay, moving on.
I'm not going to push it, but that was blatantly a lie. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure we asked Carissa about this in our interview, and she said that you do figure out what he saw. So to us, it's obviously Rivenhall. Has to be.
Has to be Rivenhall, because we know he said castle also in Songbird. And Misha, when describing Rivenhall, describes it as a castle.
Yep.
I think he definitely saw Rivenhall.
Yeah.
And that taking him aback in Songbird, seeing she sees the Citadel, he sees Rivenhall. I mean, oh my God.
And those are the places for them. That's where they were raised. That's where they were abused.
Yes.
But Rivenhall is creepy as fuck. I'm going to be so honest with you. I'm just going to say it straight out. It's fucking creepy. And I didn't like it.
I'm going to say it right here. It was the worst case scenario of Dark Academia. It was just bad news bears.
Yep.
I would not want to be in this little school.
No. Nope.
I would not think this is magical.
Hard pass.
Hard pass. It was so creepy. And it was storming. It was so stormy.
So stormy. So ominous from the get-go. You picture it. They're like on this rowboat. And then like the waves are everywhere. And it's like dark. And it's storming. And it's ominous. And it looks creepy as hell. And she's like, we're going. This is where we're. Okay. We're going in here. Okay. No, fantastic.
That place of nightmares. Fantastic. Let's go.
Oh, I love that. I would love nothing more. Let's go in there. And there's birds slamming themselves into the windows and then the floor, and then Gideon comes out and like picks the bird up, and it's like, eh.
It was a lot.
Just so unsettling from the get-go.
Unsettling, great word, yes.
I just feel like Carissa really pushed the envelope here, and I felt like there were moments in this book that were basically like a horror novel.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Like not fantasy, past fantasy, but a little bit of horror, like with the birds and it's just like very unsettling, which is a hallmark of a horror novel. Like you just feel like your skin is just crawling.
Yes, yes.
And that's how I felt in Rivenhall. Gideon, from page one on page, I was like, I don't know. I don't like him. I don't like him.
1,000,000,000%. He just like strolls in down the little stairs and creepiness to Misha. And I was like, oh, yeah, alert. This is not a good person.
Yeah.
You should go. Misha, go find Asar. Go get him. Go get him.
Save yourself quickly. Like, is Lucy here?
Exactly. And that's really reinforced when Asar comes back and he's like, don't talk to her. Don't touch her. Don't even look at her.
So another interesting part of our trip to Rivenhall as we confront all of this childhood trauma with Asar is the parallels that come to light between Asar and Misha's past.
Yeah.
And this is what Misha says as they're walking into Rivenhall. The way he wilted as we passed through these doors, I imagined that I might do the same if I ever stepped foot in the Citadel again.
Oh,
sweet Asar. And we know, like Christina said, that as children, they both had to fulfill their function and be found as useful or else they would have been thrown away.
Right.
Literally. They both were like, well, if you don't do what we say, we saved you as children. And if you are not useful, then we'll kill you.
It's so sad. And when we first meet them in Songbird, they feel like very different people.
Mm.
And then I love that by the time we've gotten here, we really understand that they had such similar traumas and they just kind of grew out of it different ways. But at the end of the day, they are very similar and that's how they bond. It's just so beautiful.
Absolutely. So I want to spend just a second talking about Asar's complicated relationship with his mentor Gideon in this book and how that mirrors the complicated relationship that Misha has with Atroxus.
Mm.
And the parallels that Carissa has drawn here are nothing short of incredible, because in Songbird, we saw how much shame Misha has after being turned into a vampire against her will. And afterwards, it caused her physical pain to try and wield Atroxus's magic. We know she was covered in those burns, right?
Yeah.
And those physical scars, to me, were a representation of her pain and shame and guilt over something that she had no control over. She was turned against her will. It wasn't her choice.
Yes.
But she's still feeling immense guilt and shame because of it. And we obviously touched upon this in great detail in those episodes, but Misha really bore that emotional weight of not just the loss of her mortality, but also the loss of her divine love with Atroxus. And she never saw that she was being manipulated and abused by Atroxus, because she was told over and over again how lucky she was to be chosen by him and how he quite literally saved her and her sister.
Mm-hmm. I didn't miss him in this book. I'm not going to lie, Atroxus.
You know, it's so similar. And then we see this play out so similarly with Asar and his mentor Gideon, because Gideon came to that small island that Asar lived on with his mother and quote unquote rescued him by taking him away to train and learn all about his powers and what Asar could be capable of. And Gideon took advantage of Asar from the beginning. He was in a position of power. He had the upper hand. Asar was 8 years old. And even now, as an adult, we saw Asar immediately shrink in Gideon's presence, and he feels so uncomfortable with him.
Yes.
But in the same way, he can't seem to bring himself to fully hate him after all that they've been through together. And we know that Gideon, like Christina said, tortured and abused Asar in the name of training him.
Yeah.
And of course, that's going to create a very fraught dynamic between them. And I just think that these complicated relationships really play on Carissa's love of morally gray characters, and that no one person is fully good or fully evil.
Mm.
And I think that she plays with the nuances of that so well.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, it was difficult to read at times. There were scenes that kind of made me feel a little bit uncomfy, but I just think that goes to show how incredible of a writer she is to bring out these visceral emotions in her readers.
100%. I love how you phrase that. Yes, I totally agree. And this is Carissa at her finest, with these morally gray characters also having messy relationships.
Absolutely.
It's just all of those dynamics at once that all make sense, and they might be uncomfy, but they're so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is the villain in their own story. And the parallels between Misha and Asar here. And when you guys interviewed Carissa last year, Kim and I did an amazing job interviewing Carissa last year. And there's a special extra spoiler Songbird interview available over on Patreon.
Yeah.
And in that conversation, you asked her about the scars. And that always stuck with me, Carissa's response of the scars that Asar bears from trying to resurrect Ophelia, and the scars that Misha bears from trying to reach out to Atroxus and trying to call to him when she can't anymore after being turned are the two of them trying to bring something back that they can't, trying to bring back a past so viscerally instead of just accepting who they are and moving forward.
Yeah.
And it's that weight as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then both having that. It's so interesting.
It's so interesting. And it's so interesting that they were both abused by the people who, quote unquote, saved them. And how complicated would that relationship be for both of them, you know?
Yes.
Ugh. It's so interesting. It's such an interesting choice for Carissa to do that. And it's really something that ties the two of them to each other. And like you said, Christina, they are so different in so many ways, but they really are so similar when it gets down to it.
They are.
And it's just...
They are.
We love it.
We love to see it, especially in that moment where he's about to torture Gideon and torture the glyphs out of him.
Yeah.
And he has a moment where he looks at him and seeing Gideon not be able to get up and kind of being crumpled on the floor and struggling to get up. And there was a moment in Asar's head where he struggled with the fact that this man to me used to be like my superhero. Nothing could touch him. He was so powerful to me.
Yeah.
And it was this interesting flip, you know, of a child seeing a father, seeing a grandfather that is now all of a sudden too old to get up and to jump up and do the things, and like understanding that there is a flip.
Yeah.
I am now kind of the parent and struggling with that at the same time that he's like, okay, but you're awful and I'm gonna torture you.
Yeah.
So it's in the same breath that he's feeling these feelings of,
sure,
this is my only parental figure and it is sad to see him aging and not who he was.
Yeah.
But also then you are awful.
Yeah.
And I hate you.
And I hate
and
you.
And I will torture you. And it will be justified.
Yeah. It's so interesting how she does that.
I love it.
I mean, just the complexities, which don't we all? I mean, I think all relationships have a level of complexity to them, you know, especially when you spend so much time with somebody. Of course, there's going to be these complicated feelings that are warring with each other at the same time. I think she just handled that so well.
Me too. Me too. You know what else she handled well? Kimberlyn. You know what else?
What else?
The sexy time.
Guys.
This piano sheet sexy time. I can't even tell you. I was so impressed with the creativity, Carissa.
Yes.
I have to say, I thought this was so surprisingly effective.
Yeah.
At first I was like, what are we, why is she in a sheet? Oh, because, oh, well, we can't touch skin to skin. I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't even care. Didn't even bother me by the end of this scene.
Didn't care one bit. I forgot. I actually forgot that she had a sheet on. I was like, same, where is it? Same. I don't know.
Doesn't bother her. Doesn't bother us.
Nope. Doesn't bother me.
Oh, I just loved it. So great. Fantastic work, Carissa. Truly. Also, the use of the library ladder was so fun. The Bell so library fun. Ladder. Just
yes.
Shut up.
Shut up.
I loved it so. Shut up. I loved it so much. And so Asar, this is after Asar has just brutally tortured Gideon.
Yeah.
And he's back here in this horrible place of his childhood. So like he's clearly struggling.
Yeah.
And he stumbles upon sweet Misha just out exploring and looking at books.
Yeah.
And she's just drawn to the place where he would always go when he needed like solace. And she's wearing a sheet because her clothes were wet. And like, what does she to do? You know? I just made a toga. It's fine.
I'm being creative. Sorry. You know?
My clothes are wet. I mean, you know, I didn't have anything.
I can't be Deb.
So I love how that's Asar's mindset, is he's in this dark place. And we've seen this trope before with our main male characters where they're feeling dark and twisty after a mission.
Yeah.
And oh, I can't be around a female lead because I'll just like taint them with my darkness. Like they are lightness and I am evil. And like, you can't see me like this. And I love the way that she flipped that.
Yeah.
In a way, it was still there. It was still present.
Yeah.
But instead we saw Asar using her pleasure and her happiness as the antidote to his darkness here.
Yeah.
Instead of not allowing it because he was too dark.
Yeah.
And this quote, he says, quote, that was what I needed tonight. Not my own satisfaction, but hers. I needed to paint over Gideon's pain with Misha's pleasure.
Oh my God.
I loved that.
Incredible.
The idea that he's like, this is what I need. I need to inflict pleasure on Misha and it will take the place of the pain I just inflicted on Gideon.
Yeah.
I'm sure that something's wrong with me that I find that so romantic and sexy, but I do.
It's deeply romantic. It's deeply, deeply romantic.
It is deeply sexy and...
Yeah, and we love it.
We do.
Sue us, but we love it, okay?
What can we say? Okay, another quote. So Misha also has just been feeling a little insecure, you know? Yeah. She's a wraith. She doesn't know. He can't touch her, so she doesn't know how he's feeling. And
yeah,
they've had a lot going on. He hasn't had time to, you know... build her up, really. And so she says, quote, I thought you didn't, that maybe you, her words were weak and choppy. This is an Asaris POV. I lifted my head through my haze of lust. I had to blink incredulously at her. What? You thought I didn't want this? She smiled weakly. When I'm like this, incomprehensible is the next sentence. Incomprehensible. Just that she would think I would ever not want her.
Yeah.
And then it says, quote, don't say stupid things. I jerked my chin to the ladder against the bookshelf. Hold on to the bars. They'll keep your hands where they need to be. Hold on to that library ladder. Are you kidding me? They'll keep your hands where they need to be.
Shut up. Shut up. I love it so much.
I can't handle it. It's so good. Okay, also another one. Quote, bars, I commanded. I'm not finished with you. Her honey eyes slipped over me, seeing, as always, every complexity I didn't reveal. But she didn't push. Her fingers closed around the ladder. Good girl, I said. And I set back to work, painting over the bloodstains with her gasps of pleasure as the storm wore on and on and on.
There's so much to break down, even in just, like, you've got the sexiness of, like, the good girl.
Yeah.
But it's, like, seeing me as always, seeing every complexity I didn't reveal, but she didn't push. And then, like, as the storm wore on and on and on, like, oh,
and
my
then, like,
God.
Painting over the bloodstains, yes, with her gasps of pleasure. Of
pleasure.
And it's just painting this picture,
yeah,
that's so sexy and so romantic.
Oh, God. It's so romantic.
And now all of a sudden, I love the storm.
I love it.
I hated the storm. I was like, oh, it's so scary.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, the thunder and the rain on the windows.
Because you can picture it, right?
Yes, yes.
I can actually picture. And sometimes there were parts in this book where it was very hard to imagine what Carissa was putting on the page. Okay. We struggled with, yes, that a little bit in this book. But this scene, you can see it. They're in the library. It's storming. There's flashes of lightning that illuminates the scene.
Yes.
And Misha's holding on to the ladder and they're on the piano. Like, you can see it.
She's also on the piano. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
I loved this.
I absolutely love this. Their relationship and romance in this book was absolutely incredible. And I feel like Carissa just keeps raising the bar and keeps taking it to another level, yeah, with the romances. And I'm like,
agreed.
I don't know how you do it, girl, but.
Because this does feel like a different romance than Aurea and Rain. They're just different characters.
Totally.
They're different vibes. They need different things. And the way they speak to each other is different in their vulnerable moments. It's so beautiful to see these two couples that she's created that I feel like are real couples in,
yes,
different ways. And they're so vulnerable by the end of their duologies together. It's so, yeah, cool. I love it.
It's really, really sweet. Okay. So we're going to start our little journey. We're going to go find a mask.
Woohoo!
But it's also a crown, though. It's also a crown. It's a mask that's also a crown. Because why? Because fantasy. Woo!
You know, because fantasy, nothing can ever be straightforward, especially on a quest. So here we go.
Okay, so let's do a little lore rundown first. Okay, so we have Maloom. And Maloom is a celebration that happens when the boundary between past and present is thinned and you can access a deeper well of power. Let's think of it in our heads as like a big party type event, very similar to what the Kajari was in the House of Night, but this is the House of Shadow version, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it's perfect timing for Maloom because the mask that's also a crown is in Vithasia, which is the House of Death, aka Alaris's old stomping grounds. And Vithasia during Maloom overlaps with the present day House of Shadows. So on Maloom, there's like a film that goes over the House of Shadow and it's Vithasia. Okay, stay with me here.
Yep. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And that enables us to go get the mask. We're going on a heist, Christina. We are going on a heist.
Let's go on a heist.
We love a heist.
We haven't been on a heist in a while. I'm so excited. We love it.
I know. We love a good heist. So we're at the big Maloom party at the House of Shadow. Everyone's dressed up. Asar and Misha are dancing. And we are about to be all systems go on that heist plan. But who shows up?
Kimberlyn, who says it? Kimberlyn, you say it. Who's here?
My baby Rain. Rain is here, yes, you guys.
Rain is here. This made our life. We knew Carissa told us Rain was coming in this book.
Yep.
And we believed her. And we were like patiently waiting.
Yep.
And we got 20 chapters in and we were like, where's our baby? And he was here. He arrived at the party. At the party. Oh God. And she's, oh, the dynamics.
Oh my God. We're so excited to see Rain. We're like, thank God. Okay. We're going to go in depth on him and their friendship later. But for now, we're going to focus on this moment. Rain shows up. He's so worried. Oh, he's so worried for his bestie. Okay.
Panicked.
They've
panicked.
Clearly been panicked. They've been scared for her. And Rain thinks he's rescuing her, that Misha needs rescuing. Okay. So when he finally gets to her and her response is, you need to leave, he's understandably, yeah, our baby is distraught. He's like, I'm sorry. Hold on. He goes, we haven't heard from you for nearly a year, Mish. A fucking year. We knew you had been captured by the Shadowborn. Did you really think that we wouldn't come for you?
Oh.
And then he says, Misha, oh God. He says, Misha, if you're being forced into something, I'm not, I said quickly. We will burn this kingdom to the fucking ground. I don't care what wars we... Rain, stop, please. You don't understand, I said to Rain. You need to leave. Then help me understand. He stepped closer and I jerked away. Hurt flinched over his face. A physical reaction like I'd slapped him. I couldn't remember the last time I had greeted Rain with anything other than a hug. Gods, he gave the best hugs. I actually can't handle this.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't.
I was reading this and I was like, Carissa, when I said I wanted Rain back, this is not what I meant. I needed to be more clear, clearly.
This is not what we meant.
No.
We wanted Rain back in a hug way.
Yeah.
In a happy way.
We meet across the ballroom. We're crushing into each other. He's grabbing her face. He's like, Misha, oh my God, we were so worried about you. She's like, Rain, I've missed you so much. That's what I wanted. And instead she was like, oh, you need to leave. And he's so hurt. He's
oh my
so
God.
Sad.
He's so sad. And like, it's a physical reaction. Like she'd slapped him
yes.
when she jerks away. Oh my God. Her saying that he gives the best hugs.
Best hugs.
I can't.
Shut up.
I can't.
Okay, so it's even worse because she basically has to leave him in the ballroom. She's like, G2G, TTYL, we have to go get the mask, okay? And he's like, hold on. Wait, what?
She's like, I am so sad that you are here right now because this could not be.
Worst timing.
Worst timing.
No.
Especially because like, I truly do have to go because we only have a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So, toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Yep. She's like, okay, hold that thought. I may be right back. I don't know. We've got to go get the mask.
Can you just imagine in Rain's head? He's like, what the actual fuck is going on?
He's so lost.
I finally find you. This is a huge deal that I even got here.
Yeah.
We've been working for a year. We got here. And then Asar's like, oh, I'm her husband. And he's like, hold on. And then she's like, I have to go. And he's like, I don't understand.
He's like, you need to leave. He's like, what the fuck is going on right now? You have a husband? You're telling me to leave? Come again?
What is happening?
Bless his little heart.
God.
He's so confused. But we do, unfortunately, we have a heist. Okay. We've got to complete the heist.
You know, it's important.
We just have to. So we have to use our glyphs that Asar tortured out of Gideon, including the extra one. Pin that for later. Okay. We've got to get past the guardian. Oh, guys, what is it? What is the guardian? It's a shark in water. Yay. This is my dream scenario.
It's Kim's dream. Truly, I read this and I was like, oh, wow, Carissa, you really did Kim a number here. The idea of a shark swimming in water, you can't see the bottom, is actually her nightmare. I mean, put that with some heights. We're just checking off all Kim's boxes.
We joked in a chapter chat when Misha has to climb that rickety perilous ladder to get up to Asar. And I was like, oh, this is my dream day. You just add a shark into it with dark water. And it's truly my perfect day. Well, guess Carissa was like, oh, perfect. No, that's what I'm going to do. I am going to add a shark in dark waters.
Don't worry. It's coming. Just keep reading. I got
keep reading. You got it, girl. They're standing in the water and the shark starts like, guys, absolutely. I would have been like, Asar, it's been lovely. I actually can't physically stand in this water. I'm not going to be able to help. I'll stand so, right here. You've got this. Okay.
Woo-woo. I'll cheer you on from here, baby.
You're doing great, baby. You look so hot in your outfit. I cannot get into the water, though. The way I was like, God damn it, Carissa. Why do you do this to me?
Why? Oh, God. Oh, it's so
but
good.
But it's fine. They don't care about the shark.
No.
They're not upset by that at all. So basically, there's a crack into the underworld. A soul eater comes in, grabs Misha. She pretty much dies again, question mark, or more than she already died before. It's unclear.
You know, who's to say? Death is, who knows?
Yeah. Not us. We tried It was a little unclear. There was a lot going on. Okay. It was a little chaotic.
Yeah. She dies a few times. It's fine.
She does. It's a very back and forth, up and down kind of situation. So Asar is like, well, I must wield the mask. Christina, what was Acacia's one rule? What was Acacia's one rule to Asar?
We don't wield the objects until we have all three. You only have one.
What?
You have the Uno object. You need to wait till you have the trace. Okay. That is our rule.
And he says, well.
And he says, well, as I've said, if Misha is in peril, there are no rules. So,
yeah.
Oh, what can I do? Let's put this mask on my face. Feel it burning into me on my face.
Yep.
And uh-oh, we now have a new friend.
We have a new whispering friend in our head. And without spoiling anything, guys, this really reminded us of a certain part of the War of Lost Hearts series. And if you know, you know. I was like, oh, God. Oh, we're back. Okay, wow.
PTSD. It's happening. It's happening again. It's
very PTSD. So now he has a little friend whispering in his head. Okay, that only gets worse. So let's just keep that in mind. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Now they do, he brings Misha back. Okay, they run back into Rain. And ultimately, oh. Misha has to command him because she can do that now, guys. She can compel people.
She can do a lot of things now.
There's no training. There's been no time for training. She's been dead half the time.
She's been literally dead in the underworld.
Yeah.
She kind of mentions at some point, oh yeah, Asar trained me on Shadowborn magic a little bit, but I didn't get to that level. Mm-hmm. Like she kind of mentions that he trained her a little bit back in Songbird, but she can all of a sudden do lots of things. She can mind speak. Mm-hmm. She can command.
Compel people.
Yep. And she can make pretty shadow pictures.
We've leveled up.
You know, girl's really done well for herself and her self-taught. She's self-taught.
Yeah.
We don't know when that happened. Maybe when she, in the interim of dying and Vincent waking her up,
maybe there was some personal development happening that we didn't know about. Mm-hmm. She took some personal development classes.
She went to some courses.
Yeah, she took some courses. Yeah, got some certifications. And she can now compel Rain, who, by the way, is the king of the House of Night. Just need to be clear. Very powerful man.
Yes.
Vampire.
She can command him.
She can command him. Yep, she sure can.
Well, she is the queen of the underworld. So maybe, you know.
She is the queen of the... Yeah, that's true. We're both royalty. So she...
But does she...
She doesn't know that. She doesn't know that yet.
Has it happened yet? I don't know. I don't understand.
See, that's unclear. I don't...
Like, when did she get that power? Like, has that happened yet? I don't know. Okay.
We don't know.
Well, we'll get there.
We're confused.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
7 p.m. Insulin sensitive.
Are we tracking everything?
Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
Get your bag!
2 ways to peel for a chance to...
Get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
Get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
But they run back into Rain and Misha has to command him and she speaks into his mind and she says, you will leave right now. You will go back to the House of Night. You will not come back here looking for me. You will hug Aurea and tell her that you love her and you'll stay safe, all right? You will go stay safe.
I can't, guys.
This is so heartbreaking. This was so devastating to read, and Rain is holding his hand out to her and then he just pulls his hand back and looks at it like he doesn't remember why he had it outstretched to her.
It is so heartbreaking. And it breaks her too. She's just, this absolutely breaks her that she has to do this.
Yes.
And Asar senses it too. She is distraught.
Yeah.
But the go hug Aurea and tell her you love her and stay safe is so real and beautiful and
yeah,
honest. And I just, God, we'll get to their friendship next week, but it is so well done. Oh,
it's so, so good. I also like to imagine that Rain went home and Oray is like, oh my God, how did it go? And Rain's like, she's married. And Oray is like, what do you mean? What do you mean? He's like, I don't know. She's married. To who? I don't know. When did they get married? I don't know. Who is he? Like, who? What has she been doing for the last year? I don't know. What do you mean? What were you doing over there? Like, what? It's like every husband comes home with the tea and then there's no follow-up questions asked. And Oray is like, damn it, I should have just gone. I knew I should have just gone, Rain. You can't do anything.
Exactly. Why did I send you? Why can't I just do it myself? God damn it, Rain.
I would have gotten all the information from Misha.
Exactly. It is all our husbands. We're like, oh my God, they got engaged. Where were they? Oh, I don't know. Well, what'd you say? Did they cry? I don't know. What's the ring look like? I don't know.
I didn't
when
ask.
When are they getting married? I don't know.
I don't know.
What do you talk about? What are you talking about?
What was said? And why were no follow-up questions ever asked ever about anything? Get it together.
I love this headcanon. And it is FOF canon now.
That's FOF canon now that is the conversation.
I love this so freaking much. The idea that Aurea was like, So what did you say? But what happened when you left? Like, so when you left though?
Yeah.
Did she say?
Was she
anything?
Okay?
Like, did she hint to you?
Where are they going?
He's like, I don't really like remember leaving. So I don't know. Actually,
it's unclear.
What do you mean? What do you mean? Like, did you say come with us?
Yeah, I actually can't remember. I don't actually know. She's like, what's going on right now?
Kate, like, you know what I would have loved? I would have loved his use of like their ghosty friend, Jessamine. Isn't she a ghost?
Oh yeah, that's who that is. Jessamine.
Am I conflating this with another series?
The ghosty girl. Yes! I was wondering who that was.
Yeah. I would have loved the use of her. Where then Rain could be like, I sent her though to follow them.
Great idea.
Secretly or something.
Yes, Christina. Yes.
That would have been helpful for Rainy, but it's not Rainy's story. So, you know.
That's right. This is Misha's story.
Maybe he did and we don't know.
Yeah. Okay. What's next?
Okay. So next up, we're going to go get an eye, which turns out is not an eye. It's an axe. So, you know.
Yep.
We venture to the Darklands. Turns out they're not really that dark, but
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
And we need some new friends for this whole mission. We're going to meet Septimus's cousin, Atreus, and Selena.
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome to the crew.
Yeah.
Fun fact, actually, friends, these are the leads of Carissa's little spin-off series. I think it's 2.5 in the series order on Goodreads, called Slaying the Vampire Conqueror. The two leads of that book are Atreus and Selena.
Yeah.
Which really we should have put together.
Yeah.
Because this is our job, one. But two, because we have looked at that cover so many times and noticed the guy with the horns and been like, why does he have horns?
Yep.
So then the second that here, Asar was like, huh, he has horns. We should have been like, Is that Horn Man?
Yep.
Turns out it is. And also turns out we will be reading and chatting about Slaying the Vampire Conqueror over on Patreon in the next few months. Shout out to Catherine Ray for choosing that as the book for us to read. We're very excited about it.
Yes.
Especially now. Like, we are so pumped. So.
Agreed.
Stay tuned for that on Patreon.
Yep.
Okay. So friends, here's our description of the landscape of the Darklands. Okay. Go with me here, quote, there was no sky, only upside down terrain hanging overhead, like a shattered mirror in which each shard offered a glimpse of another world. White dunes, lush forests, majestic mountain ranges. In one shard, I recognized a glimpse of the House of Shadow. In another, a sliver of Vostis, Misha's homeland. The fractures between them glowed with ethereal gold, like bursts of light streaking back and forth like shooting stars.
You lost me.
Okay.
You lost me.
Now, while that is gorgeous, while that is lush and gorgeous storytelling, this was also one of the times that the world building felt a little much to us. Mm-hmm. Because, again, don't get me wrong, they are beautiful. And I'm sure people are out there like, you dum-dums. That is just, you know, read the sentence over and again and you'll get it. It's not that we don't get it. It's not that we don't grasp it.
Sure.
It's just that we spent so much time describing the complex landscapes and then not sitting in them for very long.
Yes.
It felt like maybe our locations could have been a little less complex, or we could have spent more time there.
Yeah.
Like all of the Darklands could have looked the same to me. I didn't need to like have one little section of Darklands look like this. And then all of a sudden it's another really complex description. And I feel like a lot of time was spent on the complex descriptions, which again is gorgeous fantasy storytelling. But when we're on a quest and they're changing so often, it felt like a lot to work to grasp them and then have to start over.
Agreed.
I feel like it was kind of hard to grasp. So
I agree with that for sure.
Although they are gorgeous. They are
Très
gorgeous. But yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay. So major takeaway from our time in the Darklands is our showdown with Srana.
Wow, guys, this was intense.
Ooh, Nelly, was it intense? Okay, so quick. There's a lot of clicking, a lot of ticking. Oh, God. So a quick reminder, Srana is the goddess of machinery, knowledge, and science. She is a member of the White Pantheon.
Mm-hmm.
And most notably, she does appear as a spider robot-y creature.
Yes.
She's got clockwork eyes and like metal skin and knives for fingers. And pretty much she is that spidery Frankenstein toy of Sid's from Toy Story. You know, that
yes.
kid across the street that like Frankenstein's his toys. And one of them is like the doll head on the little spider body. That is how we will forever be picturing Srana. And
that's Srana.
To us, it's canon. Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. So, yes.
That's her.
So if you were also struggling to picture Srana, it's a baby doll head on a mechanical spider leg body. Okay, there you go.
And one eye is a clock and she's got no hair because it's been cut off.
Sure.
And she's gonna like been drawn on.
Yes.
And she just clicks and click, 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 click.
It's very creepy and unsettling.
It is very unsettling. It is very stressful. So pretty much we find out that Srana has been hiding out here in the Darklands using the god power from the site of Alaris's death to fuel her forge to create a little army of scary machinery spiders. So of course she turns on them because, you know, what is one to do?
Right.
And wait, oh, guess who else is here? The Sentinel. Guys, this is time, probably the 12th, it feels like the 12th time we've seen the Sentinel thus far.
Yes.
We haven't mentioned the Sentinel yet because we couldn't emotionally the amount of times that the Sentinel came up.
It was too much.
But I'm going to tell you that from now on, we're going to be calling this Sentinel this fucking Sentinel.
The fucking Sentinel.
The amount of times that the Sentinel shows up, we are aware it's Sasha. But like up until then, we're going to call it the fucking Sentinel. Okay.
It was too much.
So the fucking Sentinel arrives and the forge explodes and Atreus and Selena use the last of the snow magic to peace out, which like, I don't really blame them. They are in love. Atreus is like, I got to save her. She's also blind.
Right?
She's blind. She's like feeling around.
She can't see.
From the side because she can't see because usually she can see from the like lines of fate or something. Again, we'll learn in Slaying the Vampire Hunger.
Yeah.
But she can't see in the forge.
Yeah.
And it is a flame and Hornman Atreus is like, well, I'm going to use the last of the snow. I promised to get you here. I didn't promise to get you out. Don't make deals with the Fae, you know? Boom.
Absolutely.
But okay, the forge explodes. There's fire. There's the Sentinel. Of course there's another crack in the underworld because, you know, of course. And there's wraiths there. And Misha and the Sentinel fall in the forge into the fire.
Uh-huh, uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
The wraiths down there are helping her, which now makes sense.
Yep.
And Vincent's face like pushes through all the wraiths.
Sure.
It's like the most clear of the like wall of wraiths and his like pushes through and he's like,
yeah,
listen to me, wield the axe. Okay, so he convinces her to wield the axe.
Oh God, the imagery of that is hysterical. It wasn't when we read it.
You know how in Casper, there's the ghost. It's almost like that old school Disney-ish. You can kind of see their hands coming through the wall in like the haunted mansion or something.
Yes.
And just picturing Vincent's face really popping forward. He's like,
Casper. Be like, we've got to go, Misha. You've got to do this.
Listen to me. Wield the axe. Okay. So he reminds her that she has a little bit of Alaris's power too.
Yes.
So she can wield that axe. So girl, you pick it up and wield it.
That's right.
She does pick it up. She does fight the fucking Sentinel again, but she reaches out a hand to save the Sentinel, which, okay, fine. But then she is godlike because she's wielded this axe.
Sure.
And the axe is, the eye is kind of talking to her and it's like, ooh, you're new. Ooh, interesting. Who are you? And it's really creepy. And she just like scales out of the forge like a little goddess spider.
Yeah.
And she saves Asar because he's not doing too well with Srana's army of machines.
No.
And she gives him the axe.
Yeah.
Oh, but oh no, the gods are coming.
Uh-oh.
And without the eye axe power, Misha is dying again or dying more or it's not good.
Sure.
So Asar then is like, well, what do I do in these scenarios? I wield my trove.
That's right.
And now there's two. Well, best wield them both. And so he wields the mask and the eye. Both of them.
Yeah. Even though, again, we're not supposed to do that.
Acacia Simmer being like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Again, what did I say? Why does nobody listen to me when I speak to them?
I am the goddess of fate. If there's anyone to listen to, tis I. I understand she's about to die, but like...
I just feel like we weren't listening.
I feel like we should have pinned it. You know, listen to the FOF girlies. Your book bestie tells you to pin it.
Yeah, you should have pinned it.
So anyways, he does wield them both.
Yep.
And he thinks this, quote, "I needed to take her somewhere safe, somewhere we could hide, if only for a little while. I had seconds to decide. And when I arrived at our only answer, I knew she would hate me for it. But at least if she hated me, she would be alive." And where does he take her, Kim? Where does he take her?
He takes her to the House of Night to be with
Rain. Yes. Oh my God, it's good.
Yes.
I loved this because, again, we saw Rain. We were like, is this the only thing we get of Rain? Carissa, what a tease. I wanted to see them together.
Yes.
And then in this moment, this is the cliffhanger of that chapter. And you're like, oh, please let him take her to Rain. That's the safety.
Yes,
and we
please.
Know she'll hate it because she wants to keep them safe, but please go. Oh, and he does. And God, it's good.
Oh, it's so good. It is so good.
And that's actually where we're going to wrap it for today. We're going to pick up next week at the House of Night and everything that happens in this epic ending of this book.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we will see you next week. Bye.
Yay. Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.